I've said this to you, Beck, and I've said this to you, Chad. I hope nobody at my memorial talks about how many point-of-sale terminals I sold, but more how I impacted people's lives to make it better.
Hey, everybody. Good morning or good afternoon or wherever the heck you are. We happen to be watching this. This is Michael Beck and Chad Horn with ChatGTM episode number 16.
16.
Good morning. 16. Here we are. I'm reporting live from here at the pizza show. So if you see weird stuff happening behind me, that's something. Chad, is, of course, is there with his beautiful background of evolving art. And yeah. Funny enough, I know a guy named Art who's got a son named Jeremy. And that's a great intro to our next guest here. Mr. Jeremy Julian. How you doing, Jeremy?
I am doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on the show, Mr. Beck. That was a fantastic transition, you know?
Wow.
You know, that pew, pew, pew. That's how it goes. So first off, for everybody that doesn't know Jeremy, he is the CRO of an organization called CBS North Star. He is a leader that I admire, and I follow him closely in the trades and the industry, and really he leaves fingerprints of goodness on everything he touches. That's one of the things I love about him. The family man, a man of faith, and just a good, decent guy that I value as both a friend and a colleague. And why am I gushing so hard? Because his show is the first show that we went on to start breaking our ice in the industry. He's the reason that we're sitting here right now today, in part because he gave us the confidence to be able to have a voice and build a platform. And what Jeremy's doing is the right thing. He builds platforms, not just for his own voice, but more so for the people that come on his show to share their stories and help them grow their business. So that's something I love about you, Jeremy. So thanks for coming on today.
It was a no-brainer when you guys asked if I would come on the show and share a little bit of what God's given me over the last close to 30 years doing the restaurant thing.
Awesome.
So, Jeff? Jeremy, I don't know about you, but I'm having a little bit of FOMO with Beck being out in Vegas this week, getting to go to all the good shows. So,
I'm going to say there was four shows on the same week in Las Vegas. It was a little
Quadrophenia.
Yeah, I'm going to say when you pulled that off on your little intro to I'm getting on an airplane, Quadrophenia, I was like, oh, that's an interesting word to throw into your little deal. So.
I don't know if that's the right word, but sound right.
I have a little bit of FOMO of missing the show, but I also recognize that my goal is to be home more this year than I have been in the past, and so I have to say no to more stuff than I would like to, I guess.
Yeah. Jeremy, we'll be back on the road anyway, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Literally. Jeremy, when you were a younger man, you traveled, you know, it was more like being on the road, it's adventure. You're a family man now, and it's being gone.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And I know we all have lots of road warriors in our life, and it's one of those things that, you know what, there's a comfort of coming home and knowing what's going on and being able to give your wife a kiss at night and, you know, tuck the kids into bed and all of those kind of things. And so you do it because it's necessary, and ultimately you get to meet some amazing people that have an opportunity to change your life, but at the same time, you can't get, I mean, I can't keep doing it day in and day out. I'd prefer not to because there's a lot more important things in life. And quite frankly, when the kids are gone, my wife will probably be like, hey, when's your next trip? Can you leave anytime soon? Because you've been home for 6 months. Can't you get on the road soon?
Pam said something similar. She goes, I love the first 8 hours that you're gone because the house is clean and it stays clean. After that, I miss you. I'm like, okay, I can take that, you know? So while we're on shows, before we move on to everything else, though, so because we usually do this at the end, you know, where are people going to see you coming up? But also opens kind of a provocative question of, you know, the rising cost of shows, opportunity cost of being gone. Like, where are you pointing your marketing dollars, personal time, where you're allocating? What's coming up this year for you?
Well, so you alluded to what I get to do. So I get the privilege of running a sales organization for a point of sale company that sells to multi-unit restaurants. And so our target customer is multi-units. And it's really kind of the C-suite at the multi-unit restaurants, VP level and above in multi-units. And so where do they hang out? Quite frankly, they hang out. I saw you guys both in Las Vegas at Mertec, which we're recording this post-Mertec. in Las Vegas.
Yep.
My next show that I'll be at is in April at the Restaurant Leadership Conference in Phoenix, which I know for you, Michael, has a special place because that's where you met Pam. So I'll get to see your sappy LinkedIn post, I'm sure. It comes out every year.
You're going to see my wife. She's going to be there.
Oh, awesome.
She's coming this year. I'm bringing the kids, too.
So I'll be at RLC this year. There's a 70% chance I'll be in Chicago in May. I'll be at the QSR Summit in Atlanta. I want to say that's in August or September. That's kind of a combined show. That'll be our first time exhibiting there. And then I'll be in Orlando.
It's a great event.
Yeah, no, I remember you were there last year, and we had somebody else there from our team kind of checking it out. And now we're going to send a contingent. And then definitely FS Tech as well. So those are kind of the upcoming shows that are on my personal radar of things. Fortunately for me, I also get a chance to go to some of our customer events. So next week I will be in Cancun, Mexico, with the executive team from BJ's. So that'll be a fun.
They always do it right.
They do. And so get the privilege of getting invited to that. So my wife and I will be going to that and leaving the children at home for a couple days. So that'll be cool.
It's a hard knock life, Michelle.
Yeah.
I think everybody needs to know a little, maybe it's a secret play out of Jeremy's playbook with these events. So everyone's going to know that Jeremy's at RLC, but if you go to Jeremy's LinkedIn page, his banner says he'll be at Restaurant Leadership Conference. So it's like, imagine the additional conversations that starts, Eric, is like, oh yeah, I'm being there too. I'm going to reach out to this guy. Brilliant.
Every show, we do a good job of putting our banner up to make sure that people know where I'm going to be at. So from that perspective, every single time we've got a show coming up, we try and post it out there. And then in between shows, so it's sometime in that 30-day window before the show starts that I try and post that.
So I've noticed there's been a shift in branding, let's say personal branding or your team's branding. Like I saw something that was reminiscent of a album cover with you and Presley and Allie. Who did that? Like, was that an Allie thing or where did
it come
from? It
was an Allie thing. She did it. She's so creative. She does such an amazing job with a lot of that creative stuff. And she is, you guys both know how proud I am of her, but she's starting to find her own voice. And I keep allowing her attitude to try things, because at the end of the day, there's things that most people will automatically say won't work, but until you try it, you don't really know. And so I'm trying to get her like anything else. And going back to even your question, which I kind of answered where I'm going to be, but as we're talking about trade shows and why I choose to go to them, it's where are we getting the most value, but using the data that's out there to determine what makes the most sense. Who are the attendees that are going to be there? Part of why Chicago is a 50-50 is while there are a lot of multi-unit restaurants that we would want to talk to, there's also tens of thousands of people that are there that are single unit operators. And I love independent restaurants to eat at, but from a client perspective, we look to do business with multi-units. And so because of that, try and find where those people are hanging out, but digitally as well as in person type events. And so that's, multi-unit restaurant show that was in Vegas a couple weeks ago. Mertek is really down that exact path. RLC is down that exact path. And so for us, that's where we look to spend. Back to your comment, Beck, it's this whole idea of try stuff and then let's test it with data. Let's not just test it with anything else. Test the trade shows with data, test the collateral with data, test the creative with data, and see what resonates. A/B test everything and see where it goes. And so
attribution.
Yes, the album cover is funny, but it's very true. But I think it shows well because it's approachable and it gives people an understanding that this is who we are and this is why we're going to be there type of thing.
Yeah, it's a youthful, fun vibe, too. It's just, it's not Johnny Corporate. It's a little bit on the edge. I absolutely love that you guys are going that road. And the lady that wears many hats, literally wears many hats.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Yep. Chetto, what do you got here? I know you got something that's cooking there. I see your face.
Yeah, I mean, this is Jeremy, right? So Jeremy is a very wise man. We could probably fill this whole program with, like, life wisdom. But we generally talk about restaurant technology here. And so I'm curious, like, what piece of wisdom or advice you would have for people in the realm of restaurant technology? Maybe it's a piece of advice you want to give people, right? Wisdom you want to share that maybe you've learned not to share because you know people aren't going to listen to you.
Well, I get this question a lot, Chad, is just, and it's not that exact phrase, but it's why do most restaurant technology projects fail? And I for your listeners, I'd love to share why do I find that they fail? And it really comes down to three things in my mind. The first item is that they don't know where they're going. We often have, you know, people have probably heard, you know, if I was going to try and get from where my house is in Trophy Club, Texas to California without a GPS, it'd be really hard to find my way there. I would get lost along my way. But if I know that I'm trying to go there and I've got a GPS that says turn left, turn right, turn left, turn left, turn right, it makes it more clear what I'm expecting to get out of this. I, in my leadership journey, force my teams, and I would suggest that all restaurateurs, when they're going to embark on a project, they fill out a what I call an impact filter. It's a tool that you can find online, but there's a whole bunch of different tools out there where it's a one-page summary of what it is that you're trying to get accomplished. I want to change my loyalty provider. Help me understand what's the best case scenario. Help me understand what's the worst case scenario. Help me understand who's going to need to be involved. And it's a one-page summary that you can put out at the onset of the project to communicate to everyone. So the first problem that I see happens when these things fail is people don't know where they're going. And so they wander aimlessly through the jungle trying to find their way there, and they don't make it there. The second thing that they don't do is they don't resource it appropriately. Most businesses will add on top of an already busy schedule a project. Hey, we need to change loyalty providers. Let's go give it to IT that's already 3 months behind on all of the projects that they have, and we're not going to take anything off their plate. We're just going to throw something on top of it because they're great people and they're going to work extra hours or whatever. So the second thing is they don't resource it appropriately across the business. And then the third thing is once they get to time to launch and turn the lights on, they don't communicate well what the expectations are and, you know, methodically go to market with it. They try and throw it out in a big splash and they ultimately fail because the people that they are impacting have not been trained and don't feel comfortable to deliver those things. I'm sure we've all been at a restaurant where they drop a QR code and the staff has no, technologically it probably works, but the staff has no clue how to engage with them and tell them that. So sorry, I got on my soapbox there for a second, Chad. Hopefully that's helpful.
I'll just echo that last point you made. A handful of months ago, I went to New York, and it was actually one of the things I wanted to do was try a new piece of restaurant technology I hadn't personally experienced, but was interesting to me.
Yeah.
And I went to four different restaurants that had it. Three of them, the staff did not know how it worked. Mm-hmm. Three of the four.
Yep.
So I
see those things fail. All three of those are very, very, very common in my close to 30 years running in restaurant tech is that they don't know where they're going. They don't resource it appropriately, and then they don't communicate and educate the end users that are in front of your guests on how the tech is going to impact them day in and day out.
So well, there's that cliche. Go ahead, Jeff. I was going to say there's that cliche you hear all the time, which is an IT project without ops blessing or buy-in is doomed to fail. You know, that really touches on your third point. Hey, here's this new piece of tech you can use for the restaurants. You didn't ask us.
Mm-hmm.
You looked at the specs, but you didn't see how functional it was for what our business purposes are. And so it actually hits on a couple of notes you talked to, because it was misaligned, you know, and then the ops didn't have the buy-in that they needed to be able to roll this thing out. So they're the ones that use it every day.
One of my favorite sayings that Anthony says is it worked great on a whiteboard somewhere. And it's true. It looked great on a whiteboard, but at the end of the day, when you go roll that out to the field, it wasn't really meeting the business need because they didn't know what the business need was that they were trying to solve for. To that initial comment. So
if you're a CTO or a CIO and you get handed down this big objective and you're not appropriately resourced, and assuming your move isn't to just leave and go take another job somewhere, how do you handle that? How do you communicate that to the leadership such that you don't walk into a nightmare?
I think there's two things that I've seen successful CIOs and CTOs do. And the first is to create a level of clarity as to what we're trying to get accomplished before we waste any more resources, whoever the project sponsor is, executive, CEO, CFO, controller, CTO, even if it's his own project, is create that level of clarity. Sit down and say, what do I want to get accomplished? If they do nothing more than to say, I want to get this accomplished, create a SMART goal for it. We've all heard the acronym SMART goal for this project. Create a SMART goal for that project and create crystal clarity for that and hand that back to the project sponsor that says, this is what I understood you to want. I clear on what your expectations are? Because then and only then that you've got alignment, now you can have the resource discussion. Now you can have the timelines discussion. Now you can have the vendor discussion. Oh, we've all heard probably, and again, you tease me about life wisdom. You know, it's time, it's money, it's resources. Like what two are gonna be there? Because the third one's gonna take a beating. It's like you've got to make sure that you have those things. Which one are you gonna? You want it fast? Then it's gonna be more expensive. You know, and so with that, once you have that clarity, now you have the ability to go back to the project sponsor and says, "Am I clear on what you're trying to get me to deliver?" Because unfortunately, a lot of people run right out the door and start calling vendors. We got to have this. So-and-so, I was telling a story actually at Mertek of an IT guy that made this failing. He came to us and said, my CEO was just at a competing brand and he saw your guys' tech and says, get him in here and get this going. And we showed up and we had not done the clarity of what they were looking for. They had not done the clarity of what they were looking for. And there was a huge misalignment between the CEO and the IT guy. And it created a lot of tension in the meeting, and it was really uncomfortable for us as the third party, because all we were doing was coming and presenting what we had thought IT had wanted, but they weren't clear on what the CEO was expecting. And ultimately, the project didn't go anywhere because the CEO was like, that's not at all what I wanted. I just wanted to know who it was and how did they get there? Nothing more. So
have you ever had to lead a brand through this process if they didn't have it figured out?
Every day. Yeah. Every day. I tease about every day. This is much of what my job is. We'll be coming out with a white paper later this year on this process, Chad. I was just talking with Allie. We talked about the woman of many hats. Beck had alluded to her earlier. Allie and I are going to build out a white paper that's just kind of, what do you need to do when you need to solve these tech problems? Because at the end of the day, understanding where you're going is critical. And so helping them understand that. There are many times as a sales leader, you know, Art might not like this, the business might not like this, but there are often times when I walk into a discovery call and I recognize that this brand doesn't really know what they want. And I send them back to the well that says, you guys go figure out what you want before I'm going to show you product. Because all too many sales guys get so excited to get a demo, they go show up and throw up. And it's not, and I call it, I tell my sales guys all the time, do not show up and throw up. I don't want you to just show up and let me just get my deck going and let me tell you how awesome I am. Because you don't even know what problem they're solving, and now you've wasted their time and you wasted your time when you could be focused on something totally different.
When it comes to, you know, like rollouts and implementations, you know, you can do things as a group. And so you have a restaurant brand, you have a tech brand that's going to try to roll out technology. What are your feelings on the facilitators, the consultants, the third parties that help make this happen? And there's some great options out there in the marketplace, and there's also probably some that aren't so great. But what's been your experience so far, and how would you coach somebody that's thinking about bringing in a third party, to whether it's create RFP, to gather requirements? Because it is a big part of a lot of the conversations we have.
Yeah, I think if you can collectively use the collective wisdom of people that have been there and done that and walked that path, it is always a good option to consider. Because if you don't have the skills, especially for things like an RFP or a project rollout, those are finite engagements where you don't want to bring somebody on your team full time unless you're going to need them. So hiring an outside resource to help you through this process. I was talking to somebody just this morning. Almost all restaurant technology people have not gone through the change process of having to change out a major technology.
Yeah.
They inherited it. They inherited it because it got deployed 10, 15, 20 years ago. And now they're there. They've now taken on the seat of running that part of the brand, and they've not had to go through that. And so using the collective wisdom of people that have been around, sometimes people will hire us to do that, Michael.
Yeah.
But I would also consider there's a lot of other people that are out there that can help them get from where they are now to get through that. Because it often takes a different type of language when you're talking to finance than when you're talking to marketing, than when you're talking to the executives, than when you're talking to operations. And consultants oftentimes, they have a vested interest in making sure that you're successful, whereas the person that's running this project might be looking for a promotion. They might be looking for that next opportunity within the brand. This consultant, especially if the contract is done properly, has a vested interest in delivering the RFP that's going to deliver the business the value, that's going to deliver the project rollout, that's going to deliver the business value. And so if it's constructed properly, I think it's a really wise way to go.
Good stuff. Chad?
Let's talk about a recent post I saw you do about operators needing freedom more than any particular tech stack solution piece. This triggered an idea that we see a lot of talk about as well, called future-proofing your business, future-proofing your tech stack. So given where we are now, you know, 2025 in the industry, talk about the importance of freedom from a technical standpoint for a brand.
So I don't know. There's probably some AI version of my face, like painted, you know, with William Wallace, you know, with the blue from Braveheart.
Freedom!
You know, where I'm screaming freedom. But
you know, I'm going to generate that now, Jeremy. That's kind
of,
that might be the cover for this pod.
I shouldn't have said it
yes.
in front of you. I think Chad yes. would have been fine and he yes. would have behaved, but saying it in front of you, Becca, I have a feeling there's going to be a picture of me showing up somewhere with a blue, half blue face like William Wallace. But
the long hair is just pulled together. Anyways, go ahead.
Fundamentally, I believe, and we as a business believe, that operators should operate the business and technology should adapt to the way the business needs to operate. And unfortunately, all too often, and as the tech stacks continue to get consolidated, these brands continue to get bigger, they are figuring out a way to tell the brands, you have to operate the way that we say you have to operate, rather than giving the freedom to choose. And so oftentimes what I find when we talk to brands is they get so locked into an ecosystem that they are unable to meet the business requirements, because now they're stuck in a closed ecosystem where they're not able to try new things, even temporarily, because the partner that they chose 7, 9, 12 years ago is not willing to do that. And they've continued to take more and more of their stack, and it makes it really hard to be nimble. It also makes it the brands that do this from a brand side, it's awesome. From a tech company's perspective, it's great because they've got forced lock-in. They know the change right. cost is extreme. But as a brand, I would strongly suggest, as a restaurant operator, as a restaurant technologist, that you have to have options, because you're not going to go up against some of these multi-billion dollar organizations and tell them how to operate their business. They're going to tell you how to do it. And if you don't like it, then you go away. And so knowing that—
Here's your box.
Yeah. There's 7 to 10 different pieces of core technology in every brand. And if you buy everything from one vendor, it is impossible to replace any one of them at any one time, because you can't change a back office and a labor management system and a, you know, a loyalty system.
It's neural surgery at that point. I mean, you're pulling out a neural network, right?
Yep. It's incredibly difficult to do that. And so because of that, I recommend, or we recommend, and again, while we offer some of those solutions where you can get everything all in one, also recognize that being able to leverage and hold your partner accountable to delivering on all of those different areas is critical to taking your brand to where you want to go.
Yeah. I mean, you can talk about, like, I mean, there's that thing, like, you got platforming, which is the promise of all in one, and maybe some reduction in SaaS stress, because you have one throat to choke, but then all the best in breed conversations go out the window, getting all the best pieces that fit your business model. And I think there's one other, which is like a third, which is just the distraction tech that may sound really good in theory, almost like we were talking about before, but really isn't fundamental to actually moving a needle operationally or financially, right? And so there's core things you have to have. You have to have a POS. I'd argue you have to have an inventory system, back office solution, right? But beyond that, it starts getting a little more, as the kids say, sus on what you should have, right?
Well,
or am I wrong?
The other thing I would say to that, though, Beck, is I 100% agree with that sentiment that says they need those things. And if you're buying them all from a single source, there is one throat to choke. And I would challenge it that there's also a way to do one throat to choke. What I have found, at least in my 30 years, is people will partner with different technology vendors until they have a competing product. Then once they have a competing product, if they haven't acquired that partner, they will shut off that, or they will add a tariff, to use the political term, and I know where we stand politically, they'll add a tariff to that you now have to spend more to keep that same piece of tech in to have it integrate with that partner, versus choosing somebody that's truly open. Your operating costs could go up 20 or 30%, or that vendor could go out of business because their business model was made on charging you a certain amount, and now their increased cost of 20 or 30%.
So quick sidebar on that. How do you feel about the recent or the advent of the tech providers now charging for various API calls, right? You know, per store, 10, 20, 30 bucks a month per API call, per text. Is that predatory? Is it necessary? I mean, these are opinions. But I'm very curious what your feedback is. So what I'm hearing back from the field is, what the hell?
So
they're already getting our money.
I would say, yeah, and I would challenge that says they built a business model initially on the idea that you know what, you're open. And then they closed it, which I don't necessarily care for. I think if you always go at it, let's just say, you know what, we charge for our API access, we charge for our integration, and it's known up front and you're priced accordingly, totally makes sense.
Yep.
But I think the mid-pivot shift when you're already engaged with that brand and might be multi-millions of dollars worth of into that brand, it's a really hard pill to swallow because it's not, I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair to the operator, and I don't think it's fair to the tech provider that built all of these things. The one thing I would say is true business partnerships in a good way, you can be symbiotic. You can help each other grow.
True.
And I think with that, that's part of, back to my point on one throat to choke, part of how we valued ourselves is, and I remind our team often, is when people call you, it's because they need something. It's not because they want you to point to another vendor to say it's their problem. It's because they're calling you because they trust you to be able to help them find your way through the path. And so if that's the point of sale provider and the credit card provider, if they're calling you, it's because they trust you and they want you to help them down that path. The online ordering provider, the third party delivery provider. It could be something that changed on DoorDash, but it's impacting your customer. Your job is and I try and remind our people, they're calling you because they trust that you're going to help them. I just had a situation recently with a client of ours here in Dallas. There, the way that the DoorDash discount, $5 discount for delivery fee was coming through, was discounting the check in a different way than it had before. And they could not figure it out. It had nothing to do with the point of sale. But they were struggling to balance their books. They called. I sat down with them and we mapped out and we said, why does it happen on some days and not on other days? But I think to that point, that's where you can get one throat to choke, but still have multiple tech providers if you've got the right kind of provider that's willing to go the extra mile to help you find the path that you need for whatever it might be.
It seems that in the last couple of years, not seems, it has been, in the last couple of years, you know, the card processing world has taken over a lot of, you know, picked up a lot of the independent communities, right? And many POS companies have become their own PayFac, right? But you also, you know, when we started this conversation, we're talking about freedom of choice. And there's some people that still hold to that. You get to pick who you use to pay with, right? And so what's your opinion? Or what's CVS's philosophy on that?
It is 100% you should have freedom to choose. We are not here to dictate your technology stack. We say that all the time. We are going to offer you options, and you need to make the best business decision. We did launch a PayFac last year, and our goal is not to force people to come to our PayFac. It's to offer a distinct advantage if you are on our PayFac. And if you choose to do that, we will help you with that. And if you choose not to, we have no problem supporting all of the other players that are out there. And really, we don't. And it's one of those things that we try, and I say it often to our teams, and even when we make business decisions about our product, is make it technologically better. Make the support better, make the product better, make the guest experience better, make the staff experience better. If you can do all of those things, you can charge a premium for those things because they're better. You're paying for, you know, you drive a nice car. It's more expensive than the cheap car because it's a better experience. You stay at a Hilton Marquis versus a Days Inn, it's a better experience. You're going to pay more for that. People are willing to pay for that, and nothing wrong with Days Inn, nothing wrong with the Marriott Marquis. They're just, you're paying for the experience that you might be looking for. And so for us, the only reason we would encourage you to use one platform or another is because we've understood your business needs and suggested that we think this is going to be better for what your business needs or wants today.
So on the, definitely feeds into this idea of what the business needs. We were at Mertech, and I met an operator, CTO, who very savvy. And he told me he was considering this company he was working with to build out right? No, so this isn't even built yet. Build out their entire tech stack. He had 30-something locations. I'm thinking, what? You're going to work with a company to just have that built out? He says, yeah, they do it all AI. It's like, my antenna was like, what? This doesn't sound like something only a crazy person would be considering. to not just use an all-in-one in that sense, but to do it with a brand company that hasn't even built it yet. You're just going to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
But then I talked to that company, and I was blown away about what they were able to do. Absolutely blown away. And then less than a week ago, I talked to a guy, in a matter of days, built out a very robust piece of software using AI-aided development. I'm curious if you've yet formed a perspective on how AI development is going to, I don't want to use the word disrupt, but I'll use it here, disrupt our industry.
It is going to accelerate the ability of people that know what they want to get to an end result. I don't think it's going to make people smarter, but I do think those that want to do something, Beck being able to create a Braveheart face with my face in it is a very easy thing to do with AI. Being able to get a form that allows you to do the, you know, to insert an order into DoorDash from DoorDash to your point of sale is easier to do. So it's going to accelerate things. It's going to accelerate data. It's going to accelerate programming. It's going to help people that know where they want to go to get there. It is not going to give them the life skills that say, do not put that Expo printer or that Expo monitor right next to the heat lamp because it's going to melt and you're going to have an Expo monitor go down at 5 o'clock on a Friday night and be without an Expo monitor for the whole weekend.
Well, Chad just wrote something about you were playing with some Excel sheets in there, right? And you're like, I hope this is easier for me, but there's actually the opportunity to actually, your language, Jeremy, make us smarter, actually in some ways might make us see the language dumber. Like if we think back, I mean, I think about it, right? So we used to know how to do math in our head, not so many people anymore, calculators. We used to know how to get around on our own with a map, and now we have GPS. We used to remember each other's phone numbers, and we really don't need
to.
You know?
That's the one.
And so all these automations, while wonderful, I think you still have to know, like, you have to still know the primal skills that it takes to do this stuff. And I worry, like, with my kids, how much are you shortcutting? Now, how much are you shortcutting, and are you getting the benefit of what you need to know foundationally on these things?
Well, and I think we're all kind of in a similar age demographic, and you know, my kids are all able to do their math tests with a calculator now.
Yep.
And my kids are teenagers and 1 9-year-old. Whereas when we were kids, it was like, absolutely not. You are not allowed to have a calculator out when you're doing these things. But at the end of the day, I think that the adoption of these changes, I think there'll be people that will accelerate what they do. Why do we remember phone numbers from our childhood, but we can't remember? I can't remember my kids' phone numbers, but I can remember my childhood phone number because it was ingrained in me, right? Because you had to. But at the end of the day, what I think it's going to do is allow people to have more creativity in the areas that they need to without having to spend the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours to become an expert in something. They'll be able to go create a music riff that sounds like Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin, you know, riffing together on something. They'll be able to go create that and get something that they can start with. And then
baseline.
Only the best of the best will be able to take it to that next level to create art or to create something that's sustainable. I will say that AI has also really, really helped in prototyping. Where we find it working really well is not in production software, but in prototyping. I've got this idea. Is it going to test the waters to do that? Build me a website that's going to sell Inktank GTM hats that is, you know, going to be able to SEO, blah, 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 blah. I write this whole prompt. It writes me a website to be able to do that. I can prototype it and see if it's going to actually work. And then if it does, then I need the real programmers to come in and do what they need to do. So that's the thing that I think all of these large language models and all of this AI and machine learning logarithms are going to help us to continue to get there as we continue to learn how to enhance our own learning ability to get there.
I'm using it for that. I mean, Chad knows we've been messing around with our little guy Yankee. And I use AI to create him in the first place. And now there's programs I can do to inject Inky and make him 3D. And it poops out of my 3D printer after that. Like literally, I ideate it. I get the image. I tell it to then make it a 3D model. It injects that into my 3D printer. And literally, I can have a toy I can play with a couple hours later.
Holy crap. To figure that out. But if you would have had to build that from scratch, it would. But that was a prototyping thing. You're not going to probably have Inky sold 10,000 of them, but you can have 25 of them to throw out at a trade show if you wanted to.
Or just figure out, like you said, prototyping. Let's get our minds around this thing and bring them to space. Now we can talk about them and hand it around as an idea factory. I think it's exactly on point with what you're talking about.
Yep, I would say for sure.
I love the world we're in.
And again, I don't know that you probably are going to record any podcasts in 2025 that don't talk about AI at some point. So yes, it is definitely something that's on the forefront of everybody's mind. But I think the use cases are going to continue to flush themselves out as we see more and more of it getting adopted.
I think it should be a drinking game for those of us who don't really drink that much, but AI and disruption, take a shot.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
So go ahead, Chad. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to bring us back to trade shows and try to wrap this, kind of combine some themes, right? So
yeah,
we're going to be at RLC and you're going to be, you know, from the CBS hat, Air Jeremy, but like put yourselves in the shoes of a CIO or a CTO. How would you do trade shows if you were one of those folks?
I think you need to be, and I think there's been a lot written about it a lot. I think I've actually even done a blog post about it. I think the first thing you need to do is, what are you going for? And I think you need to be very, very selfish when you're going to these trade shows as to what you're going for. You can get sucked into a trade show and be there and not get anything accomplished that you wanted to get done and be there for 3 days and walk away and not be any better. But if you're going to look at how other brands are using AI, let's just use that as an example. We'll stay on that AI thread. What are the other brands that are using AI? What are the other tech providers doing that's AI? You have a series of questions and you go, I learned this when I was young from Art, actually, is when you're talking to somebody. So I'm sitting there talking to you, and Chad, you've heard this come out of my mouth, I promise you. Hey, Chad, what do you know about AI? Tell me a little bit more about some people that you know. Oh, you got to go talk to this person. Or, hey, what are you guys doing with AI? You tell me, oh, I got Inky, we got this, we got that. What are some other cool people that I should go talk to that you think?
Who's doing
it
right?
Tell me two or three names. Yep. Nomad Go, they're great. Okay, I don't know those guys. Would you mind introducing me to Nomad Go? Now I'm accelerating my learning at that trade show so much more because I've been inquisitive and honored you with your time by honoring what it is that you said I should go talk to and say, help me to learn and grow. So if I were but I also would be single or maybe two item focused when I go to a trade show, I would be really careful not to try and boil the ocean. You can't get it all done. Regardless of whether you're going to Chicago and there's 50,000 people there, or you're going to RLC and there's 1,200 people there, you've got to be pretty finite on what it is that you're going for. Are you going just to party? Are you going just to have a drinking game about AI? Awesome. Don't try and get the work done if that's what you're trying to do.
Right.
I was with a partner the other day. He's like, dude, I'm going to Martech because I'm playing golf 3 days. If I get to the show, I get to the show, but I'm going to Vegas because it's cold here and I want to go play golf. Fine. You know what? That's what his objective was. He got to meet with some partners. He got to build some relationships and got to play some golf. Awesome. That was his objective. Back to the point on making tech change. He knew where he was going. He had a very clear path there. He helped himself get there. For others, they want to learn more. So go map out your time. Almost every trade show has education sessions. What are those education sessions? Don't go sit in a back office education session if you just rolled on a new back office 90 days ago to learn about the new back office that you're going to now get FOMO about that back office. Don't do that. Go to the session next door that's teaching you how to optimize your delivery program or whatever that might be. And so I would encourage our listeners that are out there to have a plan for what they're going to look for and then ask. One of the best things about our industry is even competitors will share trade secrets with each other about what they're seeing going on within the industry. It's one of the largest employers of people in the United States, and a lot of the tech providers and a lot of the restaurants will help each other to get to their goal and get what they're looking for.
Beautiful. So on that same subject, right, the trade shows have evolved on, well, we, you know, 15 years ago, we pay whatever money we did to get to access the show. They'd send us a list. We'd know how to reach out and get to those people directly, right? And, you know, somebody messed it up for somebody along the way. Probably a bunch of people messed it up for a bunch of people along the way. But now we get the company and the role and everything else is, you know, you'll figure that out if you know who's going, right? And so, you know, Chad and I have our own approach and we've tried up in some ways to chew that data. How are you guys going about preparing for that show in that, you know, in that obscurity of who's actually going to be there truing up that data? What's kind of your tip there?
So the first thing I would say we do is we do have a data source that we pay for. that is a source of data, and I don't like to talk brand names on shows, but it's been amazing. There's lots of different data sources out there to go use, and we've looked at multiples, and they've been awesome. And so we've been paying somebody to true up that data in kind of a Fiverr type of environment. Go, hey, it's $100. Go get these 1,000 names. Go through this database and go look through that. So that's number one. Then what we do is we segment that list. And we segment that list after we know who the people are into who do we know, who's an existing customer, who do we know but's not an existing customer, previous customer, and who's in our ICP. I love myself a Baconator from Wendy's, but they're not in our ICP, right? You know, and so I'm not, right. If Wendy's is at the show, I'll say hello to them. I'll learn from them, but I'm not going to start calling on them. If they call us, we'll take the phone call, but I'm not going to go chase them. So I kind of flush out those people that really aren't on the list and rank them lower. And then on that middle part of the list that we don't know, I would say part of why these things happen, Michael, is that all of us, tech providers included, started blasting everybody once we got the names of the people, and they would inundate them that there was little value. And so our suggestion now is that we personalize those outreaches. It's not this AI-generated blast where it's very generic. It is, there's two things that we are now doing. One is a generalized marketing message that just says, hey, we're going to be there. We'd love to show you what we have. That's an awareness thing. That's not a direct call to action. Yep. Then the second is a very personalized Michael Beck to Chad Horn. I love your brand. This is my favorite item. I'd love to talk to you a little bit about my experience when I'm in your restaurant. And now it's a friendly engagement. And then they get to know who you are. And then you can talk tech. But unfortunately, all too often, we want to show up and throw up, tell them how awesome our tech is, the speeds and feeds, and it doesn't move the needle. Because I was at dinner at Mertech. We had dinner at Mertech. I talked to a customer. He said he got over 150 emails from different partners saying, I hear you're coming. 150 in a week-long period. So we have to be better as an organization. We have to be better as an industry that we're not just using AI to be lazy, to not have a personalized experience with these people. This guy's a VP of IT for a restaurant brand that we do business with. He said, I got over 150. You want to know what I did? Delete all of them. I didn't even read any of them. Versus now coming to, it's on my LinkedIn page. I'm sending personalized messages. If I know them personally, I'm sending them a text. I'm sending them a LinkedIn message. I'm sending them something that saying, I see that you're registered. I'd love to get together and just talk about life and see where you're at and see if there's an opportunity for us to share. So that's how I do it. And I would encourage a lot of your partners to do that because I think it's really, really critical to get that know, like, and trust factor before you're trying to sell them anything.
Amazing. 150. That's a lot for that
but
event.
He told me that. He's like, I couldn't even keep up with it. So I just deleted all of them because there was nothing I could do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Got to do what you got to do to survive. A lot of vendors would be very sad to hear that, though. But that is the reality. Got to start with
reality. But it's reality. And so why has it gotten so expensive? It's gotten so expensive because a lot of the vendors are like, you know what? It's not working what we're doing. And so that and there's people that are a little less scrupulous. I think if everybody actually paid for the access to the attendees every time, it probably could lower the cost. But we know every trade show we go to, 20, 30, 40% of the vendors that are there aren't paying for it. And so the people that are paying for all of those people to have those guests show up that are restaurant operators, restaurant executives and such.
Kind of a provocative question just for all of us here. Like, if we think about that, right? And I won't say any shows in particular, but just the general, you know, happening of the hotel or the suitcase or the lobby surf or whatever you want to call them, right? And it seems like there are a lot of them, especially at some events that have taken place. In fact, almost as much on the inside as on the outside. It's like, posted. Do you think that it might be a better move to say, hey, listen, we can accommodate you. Here's a lower price with a very limited tier of access to show floor, capture that revenue and bringing them inside and have a bigger, deeper, richer experience with more traffic, more electric moments and everybody in the mix. I've been to some shows where the lanes are absolutely wide, like really wide and spread out. And it feels, even though there's people there, that it's not as full because they just used a really big room, right? And so I think from a part of grabbing, you know, getting revenue, mitigating the hotelers, like, what do you think, where do you think that, that fix is when there is there one?
So, I don't want to blame event organizers only. I think
no, they're doing what they can, well. Right? There's environmental things.
I do believe
things.
We are to blame as well. The other thing I would say is having been on the advisory board and the board chair for the RSPA for a couple of years, the cost of an event to put it on is astronomical. It is insane. You guys all were at an RSPA event a number of years ago where there was no breakfast served one morning. Why was there no breakfast served one morning? There was no breakfast served one morning because the hotel was trying to charge $45 per person on the exit day that everybody was leaving. Not knowing how many people were going to be there, they were trying to charge the event organizers $45 per person to have a continental breakfast. And so these event organizers are stuck between a rock and a hard place of, do I offer drinks all the time? Because unions in Vegas a lot of times. And so I don't want to completely blame that. The one thing I would say to you, Michael, is I agree that there has to be a solution. I am a big fan, and I know you alluded to Sean Walshef earlier in our conversation. Like, you know, the rising tide raises all ships. I do think that there's a level of energy when you get a lot of people that are in the same industry in that same space. And I'm not of the opinion that it's a zero-sum game. I am very much a Simon Sinek infinite game, you know, fan. And for me, it is not a win-you-lose type of environment. That is not the way that we play the game.
No.
And I think all too often, both our competitors and the event organizers think if you're their suitcasing, they lost and you won. And I don't think it has to be that way. I think even Mertek, they changed their – they pivoted a little bit from what it historically had been. And I think if they communicate well, and I think if they organize it well, and I think if they make sure that everybody knows where they're playing – It's a easier path to market to allow people to do that. But you guys have all played the game where we're going to go in as a startup. We're going to go in and partner, and we'll have three different people in the same booth to reduce our costs. We've all played those games. We've all seen
them
because they don't give you options. Back to freedom of choice. I think, hey, guys, this is what I think is going to be fair. Can we talk through it? Does it make sense? This is what we need to get. And if you partner with them, I do believe that that is – the right way to do it for the event organizers to get where you need to get to. Last piece I would say to you on that is the discipline to follow up on those opportunities to ensure that you understand. A lot of people just expect people to come to them. By the time people have talked to me, they have talked to 12 of our customers. They've seen our product in action. They know more about us, no different than when I go to buy a car. I know about more about that car than the guy that's on the lot that's trying to sell me that car. And so if we all think that we're going to stand there and people are going to rush to us to go buy our tech, the world doesn't work that way anymore. It might have worked that way 20 years ago, but it does not work that way anymore.
And no, so there's no blue ocean.
Truly building relationships and understanding what problem you're solving is the way you have to sell in the year 2025 and beyond, in my opinion.
I agree.
That's a great way to end this conversation, I think, right? And now I just want to know, for all the people that are going to see this and want to talk to Jeremy, how do people reach out to you? Do you want them to? Like, what channel?
They can reach out. There's lots of different ways. My cell phone number is posted all over the web. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I'm very good with email. I do well with text, but I'm not as prevalent with text as I am email and LinkedIn. Jeremy Julian on LinkedIn. At Restaurant Technology Guys is the podcast. CBSNorthStar.com is the website. Honestly, and I say this wholeheartedly, and I know people may be a bit skeptical. For me, I want to help restaurants succeed. Part of why the Restaurant Technology Guys exist is to help restaurants succeed. And sometimes that means that I'm going to help point you to a partner. I'm going to sell you something. But many times it's just to sit and listen and say, here's my experience. This is what I found to have worked. I'm happy to take those phone calls to help restaurant operators, to help restaurant technologists. You guys have presented me with lots of opportunities for different restaurant technology companies to help them figure out their way in this market. Oftentimes I will do that for 30 minutes or an hour for free for them to help them get that space. So happy to do it. Happy to be on the show. I give out a lot of free content. Restaurant Technology Guys, I'm on episode 275 or 280, something like that right now. So lots and lots of different free content out there. Look me up. I'm pretty certain you can find me. It's not going to be all that hard.
And for people awesome. That want to be on your show, same path, right? Just reach out to you, say, hey, we got something to talk about. Is there any kind of, topics or companies you're really interested in talking to?
I vet the projects to ensure that they are solving a restaurant problem. And so if you're truly solving a restaurant problem, I want to talk to you. If you're a restaurant brand that's doing something innovative and exciting, I want to talk with you. And so for me, that's what it is. There is a restauranttechnologyguys.com/contact. You can hit me up on LinkedIn or whatever as well, or via email. But restauranttechnologyguys.com/contact. It has the contact us form. You fill out, you know, what you do. And I have kind of a back and forth that I'll do with you. But happy to have lots of people on the show. We're, I just recorded an episode just a couple hours ago. Love talking to restaurant people that are solving restaurant tech problems or restaurant operators that are doing innovative and cool things. I'm meeting with the Donato CEO the show RLC. He was talking to me on a show a couple of weeks ago about the robots that they're doing pizza making and things like that. I wanted to kind of learn from his experience so that I can then help other operators. And so for me, a lot of times I sit at the seat similar to what you guys are doing and learn and grow, and I get better because of it. And now I can share that experience with others.
I love that.
Vice versa. All right. We get better listening to you. That's for darn sure.
Yeah. But I know we've taken a bunch of your time today, or that you've invested time with us, and we're really grateful for that. I'm looking forward to seeing you at RLC and giving you that cringy moment that we're known for when I run into you. I'll chase you down. But dude, you're such a beacon for our industry. You're a solid person, and I love the fact that you mentor people, that you care genuinely about our industry. I think, you know, Art, Jeremy's father, is somebody that you know, a lot of us respect and have learned a lot from. And I love the fact that you've taken a legacy he has and turned it into your own thing. I absolutely love you, dude. I think you're one of the best people in our industry, and anybody that knows you is privileged, and that is 100% sincere.
I appreciate that. And thank you guys for giving me a platform to share what I've learned. And at the end of the day, I've said this to you back, and I've said this to you, Chad. I hope nobody at my memorial talks about how many point of sale terminals I sold, but more how I impacted people's lives to make it better.
I love it. All right. Well, it feels like we're at the end of our show, guys. We good?
Yep.
All right. Let's feel a little great group wave. And that was Chad GTN episode 15 or 16. I don't remember, but I'm 16. Not at 200 and something, so I think I can count for a while. Signing off. Thank you, everybody.
Hoping for? Sorry, I know I get on some of these riffs from time to time, and I can't.
No, you're
like,
amazing.
Watch Chad,
man.
Or you go, oh shit, how do I interrupt him? And I'm like, I'm just gonna keep rambling. So hopefully it wasn't too bad.
This is what it's supposed to be, and we're still recording, so we'll keep all of this. It's gonna be great. We don't like that debate. We want to go. You get nothing but the scoop here. So awesome. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being our audience, and thank you for being part of our industry and seeing enough in us to tune in each time. And also, please follow Jeremy if you haven't already. He's one of the good ones. Thank you, everybody. We hope you have a fantastic day, a wonderful week, and a great weekend. Take care.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks, guys.